Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining our 2023 results call. Our management team, our CEO, Kruno Crepulja, and our CFO, David Dreyfus, will walk you through our presentation and give you an update on our business performance and our outlook for 2024. This will be followed by a Q&A session. With this, I'll hand over to Kruno.
Yeah, thank you, Burkhard. Hello, everyone. I'm glad you could join us for our full year results earnings call. I think it's fair to say that Instone has shown strong resilience in a tough market environment. We have reached all of our financial targets. We achieved the result at the upper end of the guidance range, and we have further improved our strong balance sheet. The latter is due to our strong cash generation. During the downturn, we successfully increased our focus on cash preservation and cost control. This now puts us in a position to capitalize on particularly attractive growth opportunities from a position of strength while remaining cautious. The most critical point in the current environment is, of course, the demand situation, which still remains on a subdued level. However, in our retail business, we witnessed a continued recovery in the second half, and especially in the final quarter of last year, where we saw positive sales momentum. We also observed a certain slowdown of demand at beginning of this year. We believe that this is primarily due to general seasonality. We are also detecting that some private buy-to-let investors are holding back demand due to the likely introduction of the Growth Opportunities Act, and we do not view this as a trend reversal. On the other hand, the institutional transaction market remains difficult at present, and we confirm our outlook that we do not expect a broader market recovery before the middle of this year. Against this background, we are pleased that we were able to conclude two institutional deals in Q4 and Q1. On the supply side, we are currently seeing support from a stabilization of construction costs. An important driver for this is that construction companies have become more willing to give up part of their margin in light of the weaker order situation. Over the past two years, we have reacted fast and decisively to these new market conditions and the downturn. For example, we have further increased our focus on cost efficiency and cash preservation. Our efforts are reflected in reduced platform costs, which reached an annualized level of 70 million at the end of the fourth quarter, and we were able to reduce our net debt position by more than 100 million during the same period, contributing to the strength of our balance sheet. We will stay vigilant, but we are also planning to start taking advantage of acquisition opportunities again strength during the course of this year. Let's now take a brief look at our financial KPIs for the financial year 2023. Our adjusted revenues amounted to 660 million euros, nearly on prior year's level at our budget, as well as our guidance. Our gross margin stayed at a high level of 25.1%. This clearly reflects our strength to manage construction costs extremely. We once again achieved a leading profitability in comparison to our German peers. Our bottom line result is also almost stable compared to the previous year. With 48.2 million, we have reached a result at the upper end of our guidance range of 40 million-50 million. Based on our strong balance sheet, we are also in a position to distribute a dividend to our shareholders, and we will propose a dividend of 0.33 per share, offering quite an attractive yield at current share price levels. When we take a look at the current year, 2024, assume that this will mark the truth of the cycle and that it will be more of a transitional year. We are still in the good position of having a large portfolio of pre-sold apartments, even if the volume has decreased compared to the previous year. We also expect a slightly higher contribution to revenues from increase in new sales, and therefore anticipate revenues of 500 million-600 million in 2024. despite the fact that we assume construction costs to remain on a relatively high level, we continue to expect comparatively high profitability, and we expect a gross margin of around 22%. Accordingly, we assume that we will be able to maintain a solid bottom line result with an EAT of 30 to 40 million euros. Moving on to slide 4 in our presentation. As usual, this chart provides a good indication of the momentum of our retail sales. Over the course of the year, we saw a steady improvement in our sales ratio from depressed levels, and in the fourth quarter in particular, we saw good sales momentum. The positive development in the fourth quarter was supported by two sales starts, which were well received by the market. We observed a certain slowdown of demand at the beginning of the year. In our view, this is primarily attributable to seasonality effects traditionally leading to somewhat weaker sales activity during Q1. And we also observe that some of the buy-to-let investors are holding back their demand in the run-up of the likely introduction of the Growth Opportunities Act, including the implementation of tax incentives from increased depreciation. We clearly believe that the introduction of the increased depreciation on new builds from 3% to 5% could trigger a surge in demand. The next round of legislation and agreement process between the parties will be during the meeting of the Federal Council on 22nd of March. As already mentioned, the situation in the institutional market has not yet changed. Most of our institutional investors continue to stay in a wait-and-see mode. Nevertheless, we signed two institutional deals in Q4 and Q1 with a total sales volume of around 100 million euros, which we view as a great success. The pricing was in line with our expectations and reflect our project pipeline assumptions in the business plan. A key positive demand factor was, and still is, our social housing product, which is supported by attractive funding schemes. For the broader market, we expect a gradual market recovery in the second half of this year. We clearly see rising investor interest, but the development of interest rates will, of course, remain an important driver for the speed of the recovery. On the following slides 5 and 6, we provide an overview of relevant market indicators. A key question remains the development of house prices. I think we are gaining more clarity in pricing despite the still existing bid-ask spread and the connected slump in transaction volumes, which contributes to the high level of uncertainty in the market. It is widely recognized, and this is also confirmed by our own sales activities, that we are seeing only a moderate decline in headline prices for new built properties in the metropolitan areas. And newly built properties are clearly outperforming the broader market, while properties with a CapEx backlog for energetic refurbishment are seeing the largest discounts. The chart at the bottom of this slide shows construction price inflation over time. The most recent data show further signs of stabilization. This is in line with our on-the-ground experience. We expect a largely flat CPI in 2024. Our increased negotiation power with suppliers has become an important driver for this. With lower pricing power as a result of the weaker order situation, construction companies are increasingly willing to accept lower margins. This is clearly helping us to defend and achieve our own margin targets. Over to page 6. Let me come back to the current price discovery process. There is, as discussed, only limited transaction evidence and still a wide bid-ask spread for the broader market. Due to the sustained positive rental outlook, we expect yields from institutional deals for new developments to come out at around 4%. This is in line with our projection of a peak-to-through price correction in the ballpark of 5 to 10%. The chart at the top shows that historically, German residential yields were rather stable at approximately 4%, rather independent of the level of. This also supports the argument for stabilization of prices at around current levels. The positive trend of dynamic rent growth as a key driver for price stabilization is fully intact. There are definitely regional differences, but generally we have seen a rental growth acceleration in the big metropolitan areas over the last quarters. We believe that the rental growth figures provided by Bulwiengesa, shown on this chart at the bottom, are actually more on the conservative side. Furthermore, in a tight market, energy-efficient newly built properties continue to outperform the broader market. As you know, new builds also benefit from much more favorable rent regulation in comparison to the existing housing stock. In good locations, landlords of newly built properties are able to negotiate inflation-linked rental contracts. This clearly contributes to rent increases in the current environment. Moving on to slide 7. Instone has proven resilient in the downturn. We benefit from our strong balance sheet, our leading margins, and high level of pre-sales. In addition, we have reacted to the new environment as a management team and further increased our focus on costs and cash preservation. A key element of our risk mitigation strategy is our high pre-sale ratio, as shown on this chart. Projects with worth 2.9 billion euros are currently under construction, of which some 2.6 billion euros are nearly 90% or nearly 90% have already been sold. This forms a stable source of future revenues of some 670 million euros, not yet recognized, as well as cash flows. With this, I would like to hand over to David for the financial section of the presentation.
Thank you, Kruno. First of all, I would also like to briefly point out, and I'm sure you have already noticed, that we have changed our corporate design. Our results presentation is only one element of this. We have also added some additional slides and information to our company presentation, which you find on our homepage, which I hope you will find useful. Let me now walk you through our full year financials in a bit more detail, starting with page 9. As Kruno has already pointed out, we are very pleased with our overall results in a difficult market environment. We reached all our targets for all relevant metrics and generated a profit at the upper end of our guidance range. Our revenues are nearly on prior year's level. Again, construction progress of the pre-sold units were the major contributor to our full year revenues. We continue to achieve attractive margins with a gross margin of slightly above 25%. We are certainly the benchmark in our industry. We took action as a management team at an early stage of the downturn and adapted our organization to the new environment, and we increased our focus on cost discipline and cash preservation. As a consequence, we were able to reduce our platform costs, and at year end, we successfully reached our internal targets for underlying platform costs of 70 million euros on an annualized basis. The increase in costs in the fourth quarter is attributable to some year-end effects. The full effects of the cost reductions, including the adjustments we have made to our headcount, will become visible in 2024. An important pillar to our sound bottom line was the earnings contribution from our joint venture project in Friedenauer Höhe in Berlin, which is progressing positively and in line with our expectations. Our net interest improved slightly despite rising interest expenses. The increase in interest expenses is partially offset by rising interest income, as well as a high share of capitalized interest on our inventories. Our bottom line result remained almost stable compared to the previous year and reached the upper end of our guidance range. Our EPS is slightly up, which is due to the lower weighted number of shares outstanding. Moving on to page 10. On slide 10, you find the bridge on how we are planning to achieve our sales and revenue targets in 2024. After having reached a sales volume of 211 million euros in 2023, driven by strong Q4 sales, including an institutional deal in Rottenburg, which is near Stuttgart, and increased sales activities on the retail side. We are confident that we can reach higher sales of at least 300 million euros in 2024. We expect the planned increase in 2024 sales to be driven by both private and institutional demand, although we expect the institutional customer segment to remain difficult in the coming months. We anticipate a gradual market recovery with improving momentum, especially in the second half of the year, and a trend towards normalization of demand in 2025. With the signing of our first institutional deal in Q1, we have had quite a good start into 2024, supporting our view that the turning point in the institutional market is coming closer. This assessment is also confirmed by discussions we hold with our clients. As already discussed, the introduction of the Growth Opportunity Act could provide an additional boost to demand stemming from buy-to-let buyers. The revenue bridge on the right-hand side shows that our forecast for 2024 is primarily based on revenues generated from construction progress of units which have already been sold, approximately 400 million euros. But we also expect some higher contribution to revenues from new sales compared to 2023. Turning to the next page, 11. As you can see on this page, our strong credit metrics continue to improve significantly in 2023. Our strong cash flow generation was a key contributor to those improvements. Our strong balance sheet is clearly a key competitive strength of Instone in the current market environment, especially when it comes to exploiting growth opportunities, which are mainly expected to rise from the many distressed situations in the market. Our LTC ratio stands at a very low level of 15%. The net debt to EBITDA also dropped to just 2.1 times in Q4. Furthermore, this helps us to raise debt both on corporate and project level, which has become an additional true competitive advantage of Instone in this current market environment. As you can see from the footnotes and in line with the previous quarters, we have excluded some 160 million of cash and 78 million of corresponding financial debt of our Westville project in this calculation, as this is due to subsidized loans attributable to our customers. Let's move to chart 12 on cash flow. As already mentioned and shown on this slide, we achieved a strong operating cash flow based on predictable milestone payments of pre-sold projects, and despite a higher outflow for tax payments due to advance payments, the discontinuation of tax loss carryforwards, and tax payments for previous years, the most important lever for positive cash flow development was, of course, our decision not to invest in the expansion of our project pipeline in 2023. In an environment characterized by numerous insolvencies and the resulting increasingly difficult financing conditions, our focus was on keeping our cash in the company. And at least an equally important factor, we also wanted to wait for the price correction on the land market to materialize first and thus take advantage of improved purchasing conditions. We believe there is an attractive window of opportunity to buy land ahead of us, and we are actually already seeing first evidence of this. In the current competitive landscape, we are extremely well positioned to exploit such opportunities, which are expected to come to market during the course of the coming months. This is, as mentioned, not least due to our strong balance sheet and availability of financing and cash. We have a very strong liquidity position of more than 260 million euros, which provides us with ample firepower for such acquisitions. This is shown on this chart. We are net cash positive on a corporate level. Furthermore, we expect to generate substantial additional positive operating cash flows in 2024, and thereafter, mainly coming from the completion of our buildings under construction, which are largely pre-sold. In addition, we have revolving credit facilities in total of 160 million euros available. For our projects under or pre-construction, we have contractually secured undrawn project financing lines of more than 140 million euros. Against the backdrop of our strong balance sheet, we also feel comfortable distributing 30% of earnings as planned, and thus a dividend of 0.33 per share to our shareholders, as already mentioned by Kruno. In our view, this represents an attractive yield at the current share price level. Let's move on to chart 13, which provides an overview of our solid financing structure. Just very briefly, we used the proceeds from a new promissory note issued in Q4 to repay a larger part of our promissory notes due in 2024. There are no more major maturities left in 2024, and the next relevant maturities are in H2 2025, which we will tackle at a very early stage during the course of 2024. Finally, turning to page 14, we come to our new outlook for the current financial year 2024, which is summarized in the table outlined on this page. We have already provided an insight into how we have derived our forecast for sales and revenues. We believe that 2024 will mark the trough of the cycle, but we are confident that we will still achieve solid profitability in a transitional year. We expect an adjusted gross profit margin of around 22% and adjusted earnings of 30 million-40 million. With this, I would like to conclude the presentation and move on to the Q&A part.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touch-tone phone. You will hear a tone to confirm that you have entered the queue. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use only handsets while asking a question. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. The first question comes from the line of Thomas from Deutsche Bank Research. Please go ahead.
Yes, a couple of questions. The first one is on growth opportunities. You referred to growth opportunities. Just wondering if you could provide some color on the distressed opportunities in the market currently and also what level of firepower would you consider for these opportunities? And also with regards to that, maybe on land values, I mean, to what level did they decline so far versus peak levels? That would be the first question.
Hi, Thomas. Yeah, we have been last week at the MIPIM Fair in Cannes, and our, let's say, impression is that overall the chances and the sellers of land are increasing steadily. So we currently see a number of opportunities, and they are growing. For us, I think this number will further grow when the banks are not prolonging the financings, the current financing structures, which from my perspective also will come. Your question regarding our firepower, so we could, when you look at the balance sheet, we could invest 250 million-300 million in land. On the other hand, what we also see currently on the ground is that we are able to sign the one or the other exclusivity, and we are signing also options, which help us, of course, by binding projects, and not having to invest into a land purchase. And this, from my perspective, will be a strategy going forward, on one hand, to invest, but also trying to sign options and exclusivities. Regarding the land value, if we assume a gross yield of 4%, roughly, and we assume our other metrics like, you know, gross margin expectation and IRRs, then the land price in comparison to the first quarter of 2022 has to drop for permitted land by 30%, and for unpermitted land, significantly above, due to the higher interest rates in comparison to the calculation, which has been brought by the developer in the first quarter, 2022. So, to give you one example, if you have a master planning process to be launched and the project is 4 years-5 years ahead, then you, the price for land could drop by 70%. So this is, I would say, the ballpark we are in. And what is good, and this is what we have anticipated, that the market is not still not there. There are parts, you know, there are projects where we the seller is accepting our price calculation. But from my perspective, the overall, the broader market price correction is still to come in the next 6 months-9 months.
What would be the key focus for growth? Is it just you look for opportunities and then you decide what city or what product? Or is it like you have, like, in mind that maybe you want to expand into the affordable or lower yielding or certain regions?
So from, you know, we currently look more on really good locations, and this is both. So it's affordable and also the core business. The affordable business is currently very attractive because when you look at the subsidy schemes of the government, they are very attractive schemes out there. Not everywhere. You have to look at it region by region, state by state. But one example is our project we have sold in the first quarter to an institutional buyer, where we have a significant portion of social housing included, which generates for us, but also for the investor, attractive returns. So I can't answer this question, you know, with one sentence. But we think that we focus currently on good locations. So locations is key. The second is, we focus on more short-term, accessible projects, where we can, you know, start the construction, maybe the-
Thomas, there's some noise in your-
Yeah, you should go on mute because we have a lot of background noise. And third, for more long-term oriented projects, we are currently negotiating with the financing banks to further finance the projects, because for us, it does not make sense to go with a significant portion with equity into the project and then you need 4 years for the master plan. So hopefully this gives you a feeling for how we currently act. So affordable, yes. Core business, yes. Good locations, more short-term projects, and for the long-term projects, the banks have to finance it further. Otherwise, it does not make sense for us.
Maybe yeah, just to add
yeah,
on the firepower and the finance side, just to give you a feel, we normally approximately leverage land purchases at around 50%. Just gives you an indication on the firepower that Kuno has mentioned and how we finance our properties also for the long term.
All right, thanks. The second question is on this Growth Opportunity Act. We expect a decision on Friday, so to speak, Friday. I mean, let's assume they agree on it. How quickly would you think this will get translated into higher demand for your business?
That's a good question, Thomas. So I have to say that we haven't reflected a positive decision in our guidance. In the past, when you look at the year 2021, the buy-to-let investor space was roughly 10 to 15% of our overall sales volume. I have to say that currently the international investors from China and from other countries, they are still not back currently, and they are not positively influenced by the depreciation program, of course. On the other hand, I have to say that in discussion with potential clients, we clearly see that this program is highly attractive. So it's for us hard to predict what influence this will have. It will come very fast, because we have already ongoing projects where the scheme, if it's positively decided, is working. So the buy-to-let investors could immediately benefit in the ongoing projects. And the question for me, what I can't really answer today, is how many people who are currently not thinking of, you know, buying as a buy-to-let investor are convinced by this very attractive scheme to invest. And this question, I think we could answer better in the next result presentation.
Yeah. Maybe a quick follow-up on this. I mean, let's assume there's good demand on a positive decision. I mean, just wondering how quickly you could ramp up the sales pipeline. I mean, you need specific product for that, as I understand.
We have currently ongoing projects which could clearly be part of the scheme. So, for example, we have our Rothenburgs Orten project in Hamburg, where we started sales for mainly buy-to-let in the fourth quarter last year. So this project could benefit immediately from this scheme, and others we have in place too. And we have of course sales start preparation of projects where we further made progress in the last year. So we haven't stopped the project preparation. This work went further, but we have adjusted also the many projects to the demand we are seeing in the market. So the new energy standard plus buy-to-let investor business is still a bit stronger currently, despite from the depreciation additional degressive depreciation. So we already changed our project to the new environment. But it's, again, I can't give you an exact figure because it's for us also currently not really transparent. What could it mean? I think the government decided to implement such kind of program because when you, if you remember, in the 90s, there was a highly attractive scheme building up Eastern Germany, and this led to roughly 600,000 units completion in the 90s. So I think this is the reason why the government has, or part of the government program is the depreciation program. They hope that through this program, the completion rates will go up massively.
Okay, thanks. My last one is on the 300 million sales target. Could you give a rough idea about what split you expect regarding retail and institutional?
So we have already, we have already done one deal in the ballpark of 60 million. And we expect 300 million or more than 300 million being roughly 50% institutional sales, and the other 50% is buy to let and owner occupier business.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
We now have a question from the line of Thomas Newhall from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for the presentation and taking my questions. I have three of them. And I would like to start with a follow-up question on the Growth Opportunity Act. You said that there was a decent pickup in retail demand in the fourth quarter. I was wondering if you have any idea or indication if this was driven already by expectations of people that the Growth Opportunity Act will be implemented, or do you think there were also other drivers which were responsible for the increase in demand in Q4?
And we also have been, of course, discussing this with our sales agents on the ground, because we couldn't do, we couldn't say that we are we guarantee the scheme. So there was no guarantee, of course. I think the clients, the current ongoing program, and this is what we have faced in the last overall the last 12 months, that the current 3% depreciation plus the rent price inflation, which we also see on the ground, the massive rent price inflation, plus I think in the last quarter the interest rates went down a bit, and these mm-hmm. three elements led to the increased demand in the second half. And additionally, I think that the market has recognized that there is no significant price drop to expect. And these are the elements from my perspective that led to the increase of sales activities.
Thank you. The second question is on the institutional demand. You said you've seen first signs of a return of the institutional investors in your business. I was wondering, from your discussions with institutional investors, what are still the key concerns or issues for institutional buyers, and what do you think will need to happen for a significant rebound of this business?
In our discussion, I think that generally spoken, the appetite for new builds in metropolitan areas is still there, due to the fact that many of the investors are trying to change their portfolios. there are investors, the big pension funds who have a lot also, you know, commercial developments in the books, which maybe have reached barriers for further investments. The appetite is still there, and I think new builds properties, resi properties in the metropolitan areas will remain a very attractive product. The question, when do we see a normalization, is linked to, I think, the question how the interest rates development will go further. We also think that, and this was one, I would say, main information or point we've seen at the MIPIM, that the new price reality is becoming more and more clear. So our assumption of gross yields of 4% is clearly, from my perspective, becoming the new reality. And for many, it means they have to adjust their values of land, they have to adjust their pricing. And what helps the investor additionally are the government social housing schemes, which are, from what I also see on the ground, is that only a few investors really understand the schemes, due to the fact that Germany is extremely complex. You have in every region, every state, different social housing schemes. But they lead to cash-on-cash yields for investors, which are above 4%. And this means that this is a really attractive investment. Nevertheless, or let's say, where you can reflect the higher interest rates without any hesitation. So I think this will become more and more clear. And we also see a lot of international investors having more and more focus on the German market, where you know the yields in the past have been not really attractive, but we see that current the 4% cash on cash yield is a very attractive investment case, and therefore we see here also more appetite coming. But again, Thomas, I think it will take another 6 to 9 months before we see really more traction here.
Thank you very much. And my last question is for David regarding the guidance for 2024. I was wondering if you can also give us an indication on the outlook for the development of the operating cash flow, excluding land acquisitions.
Well, I think there is a backup slide showing what kind of cash flows we will expect from the part of our pipeline that is under construction. And that is obviously, you know, the full pipe, the full cash flow over sort of the next 3 years. That will be, you know, most of it coming next, and then, you know, probably, you know, half of the remainder will be in 25 and 26, in 26 and 27. So that gives you a bit of an indication. I think where we are is that we think we will be in a similar ballpark of on an operating cash flow basis of what we were able to steer people towards in 23, which was, we said we will generate a positive cash flow, and we ended up at around 100 million or above on an operating base, operating cash flow basis, excluding land investments.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manuel Martin from Auto VHF. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. General, two or three questions from my side. A bit of follow-up on the outlook, maybe beyond 2024. Suppose that 2024 is not the trough and the sluggish situation goes into 2025. Do you have a kind of worst-case scenario in that case? What could that mean for your revenues and earnings?
So I think it's too early to give a detailed guidance for 2025. I think what we can do is looking at the current market environment and the question what is already roughly secured and what has to be secured by the sales activities we are planning for this and next year. So we have the 19th of March, and I think the first quarter is regarding sales volume. I mentioned the institutional sale already. We are there, so we are in line with our expectation for this year. We also said that for the 300 million plus sales volume, we don't have anticipated the aggressive depreciation program. So we are here conservative, and I also think that. Looking at our portfolio and our, let's say, sales yield expectation, we are in line, absolutely in line with with what we have sold now to the one institution in the first quarter, and this gives us a high certainty, and also we are here optimistic that we will reach the 300 million plus. If we reach the 300 million plus, then we have roughly from already sold units without the 300 million, we are generating roughly revenues of 200 million in 25, and the 300 million lead to additional revenues plus the sales volume, which we plan in 2025. So this is what I can say today, Emmanuel. Again, we can't give a more detailed guidance for 2025 currently.
Yeah, it's a difficult exercise, understandable. Okay, the maybe a question on your P&L. I saw that there was 17 million one-time expenses. When it comes to valuation of inventories, maybe I didn't get the point before, but is that the devaluation of the inventories that you have in your balance sheet? And if yes, could you give us some color by how much your inventories have been devaluated?
So it's as Kuno has mentioned, we've done quite a lot of work in 23 to adapt our planning to the new environment. And because of that work, you know, and change of planning in the different projects, we decided to take out the old planning costs in the area of the 80 million that you just have mentioned, the 17.7 million, and adjust our earnings accordingly.
Mm. I think an additional comment from my side, what makes us really very relaxed is you've seen a lot of, you know, write-off in the last few months of property companies. We of course went through let's say our pipeline and looked at the valuation, what is the price levels we could achieve by investors and also by owner occupier and buy-to-let buyers, and we feel very, very comfortable with the current valuation of our portfolio. We mentioned a few times in the past that it's an average 4 years old, and we have been always focused and very cautious in investments, and this is now paying out. I think we will generate attractive margins from this pipeline, and again, we don't see any write-off necessity for the existing portfolio.
Okay. All right. My third and last question would be, as you have been attending the MIPIM last week, what's your impression on the institutional investors? I mean, for what are they waiting for to start their buying activities? Are they waiting for interest rate cuts, or what's holding them back?
I think that there are different types of investors. So when you look at the pension funds, they have currently the one or the other has a problem that the stake of investment in real estate has brought them to an investment barrier they can't go through. So they have to reduce parts of the investments, and from our perspective, in our discussion, they try to reduce more commercial parts or older stock, and this is in the current market environment not so easy to be done. Then you have the second group, which is which are, you know, the four structures. They are currently a bit have the problems of collecting money. Then you have the third, and this is from my perspective currently the most stable one. These are companies who are well financed, which have a good equity ratio, and they are still looking at it and willing to buy. I mentioned our client who has bought the project from ours in the first quarter. And I also think that in our discussions we have that the affordable housing, the social housing parts are and they are still attractive and becoming more attractive. And we believe that in the year 2024 we will see deals which are linked to projects with a significant portion of social housing. We also will see deals where the one or the other investor coming from international side. You've seen maybe the deal of Greystar buying the Berlin project, and we will see more of this in international institutional money. And again, many of the investors looking at the yields don't really understand. And I have a discussion at the MIPIM with one really big institutional company, international institutional money. And I told them, look, we are able to offer you a 4% cash on cash yield, including an ESG, high ESG standard, adding a lot of social housing, and we see here a very, very positive reaction. So the people have to understand that you are still able, with the price, with a new price reality, to fulfill the return requirements of not only German-based money but also international money. And again, I think this price correction is still on its way. So many of the developers are still struggling. The banks are struggling to accept the new price reality, and this will take some time. And Germany is a lot of intransparent in comparison to other countries like UK or US. So in Germany, it takes more time. But I believe that next 6 to 9 months, we will see more traction, and when the new price reality is in place.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Philipp Kaiser from Warburg Research, GmbH. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. Thanks for the presentation, and thanks for taking my question. I would start with two questions just to clarify if this understand it right. The first one is, you mentioned you could invest 250 to 300 million in land. Is that levered or unlevered volume?
This would be with leverage.
Okay, perfect. Thanks. You also a lot of questions about the Growth Opportunities Act. So if I understand it correct, you do not include any potential positive effects from this special depreciation in your current guidance.
Yeah, it's true. So we haven't included any positive reaction driven by the degressive depreciation program.
Perfect. Thanks. Then you all already mentioned that you achieved the kind of platform cost around 70 million by the end of the last quarter. Could you give us a run rate for the next year? So do you like second round effects, wage inflation? Where it's kind of the potential range of those platform costs for the next years or this year?
I think the run rate of 70 million gives you a good indication, including some wage increases. We will end up a bit above the 70 million at year end.
Okay, perfect. Thanks a lot. And then you also mentioned that you expect the M&A opportunities to come to the market in the next couple of months. Are there a specific range or a specific volume you have an eye on, or is that more depends on what these opportunities look like? Do you have a ballpark of potential M&A firepower?
So what we currently do is we are not focusing on let's say on real M&A transactions. So it's more like portfolio transactions. These are more in our focus. And what we believe is that the biggest part, or let's say the biggest volume of really attractive project will come when the banks have to step in, the senior debt lenders, and here we think that we are providing them an attractive partnership. So we focus more on portfolio deals, more on helping the banks in performance of the projects, and picking out the most attractive projects. And for us, it's a very, very, I would say we are here perfectly positioned, because there's only a very, very limited number in the market who can buy. And on the other hand, of course, we see a lot of private equity preparing themselves to step into the market, but this is also very expensive money. So therefore, we feel very, very good prepared for the current environment in the market.
Okay, perfect. And my last question is with regard to the institutional deal you mentioned. You signed in Q4 and also in Q1 worth 100 million. Could you shed some light on the Insti deal in Q1 revenue wise for the current fiscal year? Any indications?
You mean what is the revenue recognition we are planning from these projects for this
exactly
year?
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe I give you a bit of a color on the full year development, as Kuna has done for 25. So we have approximately out of the pre-sold revenue recognition, which is in total around 760 million, 400 million that will be recognized in 2024. And then we have, sales of above 300 million, of which we will recognize, depending on is it 300, 350, 400, it will be somewhere between 100 and 200 million that we will recognize during the course of this year. So, also depending on how much of the sales come from, buildings under construction. So, you know, they obviously those will generate higher part of revenues immediately in 24 versus sales of buildings that are in early construction or pre-construction. So I think, you know, that gives you sort of an idea. We generate probably somewhere between a third and 50% of the sales are expected to be generated within 24.
Thanks very much. I was trying to figure out how close we are to the lower end of the guidance, including like the 400 million you mentioned and adding the signed NC deal in Q1. But yeah, understood. Perfect. That was all from my side. Very helpful. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Philip.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Burkhard Zawaski for any closing remarks.
Yeah, thank you for your part. Further questions, please do not hesitate to contact the IR team or send us an email. Thank you very much and goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.